back to the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. I'm your host, Allison, and joined again, of course, by my pal, Ryan Pryor. And today is special because we are finishing up this four-part PT-109 series that I know you guys, I've gotten a lot of positive feedback about. You guys have really enjoyed it, and I appreciate that so much. So we're going to finish it out. And obviously, we were left on a huge cliffhanger last week.
What I like to call the crocodile cliffhanger.
Absolutely. And I know we've all read this story, but it's very interesting to hear it kind of come to life in an audio format instead of just an article. So
for
I'm
sure.
loving this.
And of course, there's the 1963 movie, if you're looking for a theatrical retelling. And then you could just also just close your eyes in bed and listen to the Jimmy Dean song over and over and over again.
That does it. Isn't it the Jimmy Dean frozen sausage balls are so good.
They are really good. I've had everything that Jimmy Dean makes.
So good. Yeah.
That should be the title of this podcast. Pure pork sausage, crocodiles. Pure pork sausage, crocodiles, and John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
So I left them on this cliffhanger last week, and then like we come in with this intro, so that I have to get them back in the scene, all right? Picture it. Sicily.
No. And no, you know what? Yes. And you know what? I'm going to play a little jingle right here to get back, set the mood. So here we go.
Plum Pudding Island, August 2nd, 1943. Crocodile and shark-infested islands, waters. And John F. Kennedy has a man strapped to his back, pulling him in through the wake onto the beachhead. The name of the island was Plum Pudding Island, but the men called it Bird Island. This was due in large part to the amount of bird guano that covered all of the bushes. It's really hard.
You've got to stop it. Now you're doing like a History Channel, like Forensic Files.
It's called Bird Island. They called it Bird Island because there was a lot of bird crap on the. I was really having a hard time to be serious
talking about
bushes that were covered in bird poo. But at the time, it was serious, all right? At the time, it was a big deal, okay? It was a big, huge deal. Instead of, so Kennedy is literally pulling this guy in his teeth. He pulls them all up. He gets all 11 of them are up on the beach, and they're just exhausted, obviously. I'm tired after like 4 hours of doing minor chores. They have just swam through shark and crocodile-infested waters and made their way, evaded Japanese attack, evaded the enemy. It's a war, right? Things are not, you know, not safe. But instead of sleeping, John F. Kennedy instead swims miles away from Plum Pudding Island out to the Ferguson Passage to look for passing American ships and also to just to make sure that the Japanese weren't around. On the way back, he almost dies. The current and all the waves spin him into open water. And so he has to fight his way back to Plum Pudding Island. He actually stops off to sleep at a smaller island nearby. He's like, I got to stop. I got to sleep. So he sleeps at a smaller island by and then makes his way back to Bird Island. By August 4th, so we're now 3 days after the initial mission. So 2 full days, but 3 days after the initial mission. Kennedy and his men realize that Bird Island is not it. And so they make their way over to what's called Olasana Island. And they hope there that they will find more food, more water, and maybe, just maybe, some more coconuts. Coconuts, if you already know this story, play a big role later on. I don't know if the coconuts from Olasana are special or not, but unfortunately, when they get to Olasana Island, there is no fresh water. And I don't know if you know this, but you can't drink salt water. In fact, the reaction to drinking salt water is that you go insane. So, I mean, like,
yeah,
you can...
It dehydrates your whole body.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can go to the beach.
You just dry up.
You can go to the beach and you can get and not accidentally drink some salt water, whatever. But if you are forced to drink salt water, it will dehydrate you as quickly as regular water would hydrate you. And your brain literally just goes insane. You start losing your mind. So the next day, they have to leave Olasana Island. Now, remember, when I say leave, when I say move, when I say go, I don't mean that they're hopping in their skippy and they're motoring over. They are swimming.
Miles
in the hot sun. Meanwhile, there are sharks and crocodiles and all sorts of other oogity boogities who are out there to get them. And oh, by the way, the Japanese Navy, the Imperial Japanese Navy, is cruising around these waters. Now, you may not know much about the Second World War and the Japanese, but let me just tell you that the Japanese during the Second World War were not known for treating their prisoners very kindly. In fact, Japanese prison camps were some of the most brutal and sadistic, hellish places in the entire Second World War. If they are discovered, they are almost certainly going to be imprisoned and probably beaten and probably flogged and probably left without food and water. They might very well die in prison. So they set off. When they set off, they're swimming off to the island of Nauru, which is close by. Now, luckily, as they're walking around, as they're getting on there, they have to make their way quick up in the woods because they're afraid of Japanese settlements. But as they're looking around, they discover a hidden boat, but they also discover a Japanese vessel that has crashed out on the outer reef of the island. I left a pause in there just to think, are there Japanese in there? No, it was a crash boat. As Kennedy and another man who was well enough, healthy enough to walk with him, they started to explore. They were wandering around the island looking for water, looking for coconuts, looking for other things, right? And actually, they come across a box with Japanese lettering on it. And they open it up, and inside they find canned water, so hurrah, and some Japanese candy. I couldn't confirm or deny what the Japanese candy was. I know that Japanese candy has a very particular following. I know people really love Japanese candy. I cannot tell you what kind of candy this was.
When we were in China, mm-hmm. we tried just about everything we could get our hands on, and we brought home a bunch. It's just the flavors are so different and so interesting. So yeah, I'm sure it was.
I don't know what it was. It might have been. I don't know. But I think
cared.
To people who were starving and dehydrated,
yeah, they didn't care. That's honestly a great find when you're in that situation.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I mean, the best of finds.
I mean, there's probably other things that you would rather have.
Well, yeah, but if you find some canned water and
sure,
some candy.
Sure, sure. Some candy and some canned water. If only you could find some pure pork sausage.
Some Jimmy Dean sauce.
Some Jimmy Dean. Man, Jimmy Dean should pay you.
Honestly.
Jimmy
There's
Dean?
No way he's still alive.
No, I mean,
the company of Jimmy Dean.
You know Jimmy Dean's still a company.
Obviously, I just talked about their sausage balls I buy.
But I'm talking about that you should contact the PR for Jimmy Dean and be like, yo, I just gave you free advertising.
That would be, honest to God, the weirdest sponsorship I think that's possible.
But, hi, welcome back to the Kennedy
Dynasty. Jimmy Dean, if you're listening to this, I'm here for it. Call me.
Hi, welcome back to the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. I'm your host, Allison. And as always, we're brought to you by Jimmy Dean Sausage Balls. Put them in your mouth on Thanksgiving morning.
Honestly, that's what we make them for half the time. I pop them in the oven on Thanksgiving morning, eat them during the parade.
Yep.
It's an American Thanksgiving.
That's actually a Southern Thanksgiving, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's a Southern Thanksgiving.
Let's just differentiate a little bit. Okay.
Well, you have to eat the sausage balls for breakfast because you don't want to fill up because then have Thanksgiving lunch.
You need that good
dinner.
Protein. So, you need that good protein in your belly.
You just need a little something, and then you're good to go for the rest of the day. Yeah.
So they discover candy, not Jimmy Jean Pura Park sausage. As they're rounding the beachhead back to go see their men, they see two men out at this deserted Japanese vessel. And JFK begins to wave, "Hello, hey, we're over here. We're stranded. Everyone, please, hello, please, hello." And they scurry away. Which, imagine how heartbreaking that would have been, by the way.
Yeah, super heartbreaking.
So JFK takes the candy and the water back to the stranded men. And that night, JFK is able to take the canoe that they had found out into the Ferguson Passage again, looking again for American ships. But remember, he wouldn't see that. There's no American ship that's going to be going through there with their lights on. And PT boats are small and fast. So he decides to return to Olasana Island to just see if there's anybody there. And then he finds out that he meets the two natives that he had seen earlier and finds out that they had contacted the other sailors that had survived PT-109. Turns out these two guys, one's name was Binku Gasa and Ironi Kumana. And even better, it turns out that these two men are scouts for the Allies. So what he does is on August 6th, Kennedy, so this is again, we're four days later. Kennedy goes back with the two men from Olasana, and so now he's got a plan. He's got these two guys who know how to get to an American outpost. They can go disguised because the Japanese don't mess with the natives. But he doesn't know how he's going to communicate because these guys don't speak English, and he doesn't speak their language. And he doesn't have any way to write things down, and he doesn't have a way to record anything. And so he's at a loss. How does he get these guys to be able to go and tell them where he is? Because they don't also know the island's names on the maps. He doesn't really know what he's going to do because there's no real way that he can get there. When Gasa comes up with a fantastic idea. Allison, do you know what idea he comes up with?
To carve on a coconut.
To carve on a coconut. Mm-hmm. Bin Kugasa gets JFK a green coconut. A green coconut. You can't do it on the brown ones. The green coconut has skin, right? And you can carve into it. And JFK carves the following message. Nehru-ISL, Narrow Island, commander, ... Natives know position, ... He can pilot, ... 11 alive, need small boat, ... Kennedy. That's the message. And off he sends these two guys, just hoping that they will bring this coconut message to the nearest Allied outpost. And they do, because the next day, 8 Islanders arrived the following morning with a message from a Lieutenant Reginald Evans that he should come to his base and that they would figure out a plan to get the 11 sailors rescued. And so Kennedy hides underneath palm fronds in the natives' canoes, literally lays down underneath palm fronds, and is spirited away to Gomu Island. And this is 6 days after the attack. And so they develop a plan. He and Lieutenant Evans involves bringing 2 PT boats, PT-171 and PT-157, to Gomu Island and then out to pick up the men who are at Nehru. But Kennedy, and again, in another show of bravery and incredible valor, says that he needs to go with them. They knew where to go. They could go get the guys themselves. Kennedy didn't have to go with them, but Kennedy wasn't going to let other men rescue his men. And there's actually this little funny story that whenever they were going out to meet the PT boats for him to get on the boats from Gomu, that they had agreed that each boat would do four rifle or pistol shots to identify themselves. And Kennedy's pistol had only had 3 shots left in it. And so he fired his first 3 shots, and then he had to borrow Lieutenant Evans's rifle for the 4th shot. And when he shot it, he didn't account for the recoil, and the rifle knocked him off the boat into the water, which I thought was pretty funny.
That was so funny. Bless him.
Bless him. And so these PT boats, as along with John Kennedy, cross the back end of the Blackhead Strait and approach the sleeping crew. Meanwhile, Japanese patrol boats are everywhere, but by 5:30 a.m. on August the 8th, those men were back on the base at Rendova Island. And for his sheer amount of heroism, Kennedy was awarded the Navy and Marine Corps Medal and the Purple Heart. And again, literally, is heroic. But of course, Joe has other ideas. So he makes sure that the New York Times publishes like 30 different articles all about how JFK was a hero and how he saved all of his men. They largely ignore the efforts of there was 2 other guys who helped, who was also a part of who were actively working and swimming and doing things like Kennedy was, but they don't mention them. Joe, of course, wouldn't let that happen. The after effects of the injuries that he suffers during this incident with PT-109 would affect him for the rest of his life and would almost become debilitating, leading to a later drug addiction, a painkiller addiction, of which there are a couple of stories that I think we should definitely talk about in future.
We should. I've mentioned them vaguely in that health episode, but yes, I do want to talk more in depth about the stories of that. And also, I do want to highlight, too, I'm sure he knew kind of what he was on, but there was
nobody did
opioid crisis or anything like that back then. So like, I truly think he was just continuing on as he knew how. I don't think it was like meant to be a drug.
No, just remember at the time, doctors, I mean, people were being prescribed amphetamines, like basically watered down meth. Doctors were prescribing all sorts of stuff.
Exactly. So I don't think it was like an intentional drug.
If a doctor prescribed it wasn't considered dangerous.
Right. Right. And I want to note, too, it's just amazing. I know that Joe Sr. obviously put his spin on it to help with a later campaign and things like that. But I also do want to note and really focus on the heroism that he had. And he deserved those medals because he conducted himself in such a way that was not... outside of what the average person
Joe Kennedy might have constructed the narrative afterwards, but JFK deserved every accolade that he received.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he truly cared about his men first and foremost before himself and anything and just keeping them alive. So I think that's just so remarkable of a human being.
The last note that I have was that the coconut was brought back to Kennedy later on by Ernest W. Gibson, who was a soldier of Pacific Theater. And Kennedy had that coconut preserved in glass and, of course, used it as a paperweight in the White House. And if you are interested, you can view that at the Kennedy Museum in Boston.
Yes, I've actually seen it in person. And it was actually Joseph P. is the one that had it made for his son and put as a paperweight. And it is at the Museum of Boston. It's kind of surreal to see it in person after seeing it in photos for so long. And I also have a replica of it that I purchased from the library. I'm not sure if those are still available, but if they are, you should definitely get one because they are worth every penny.
Get yourself a coconut and a sausage bowl.
Get yourself a replica. And
get yourself a replica. Some Jimmy Dean.
I love it, Pryor. Thank you so much for bringing this to us.
That's like, it.
It's incredible.
There's a lot more. There's so much more. I mean, there was little tiny little things and all sorts of stuff, but I try to, you know, we pare it down. We're not stiff history.
Sure. Yeah. And we talked about, though, how we would revisit different, you know, side stories and different things out of this. But we wanted to lay it all out at once, you know, over this series. And it's just, it's a huge moment and it deserves that. So thank you so much for joining me to bring it. Are you okay to answer some questions?
I'm happy to answer some questions. All right. I can't promise that I'll know all. If it's an opinion question, that's great. I can't promise that I'll know all the answers.
Therefore, in answer to your question.
Okay, Ryan. So it says, if PT-109 didn't happen, do you still think JFK would have won the presidency?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yes, being a hero is great and all, but JFK was, he lived a charmed life. Let's not mince hairs here, right? I mean, let's not, he was already famous before, as the son of Joe Kennedy, before the war even started. So, like, it's not, PT-109 helped, but presidency, even congressional campaign, no. No, Joe Kennedy, his dad, would have found a way to get him some other stardom. If he wasn't a war hero, he would have been an actor. You know,
I totally agree. Yeah, I think the war hero aspect definitely helped, but he still, like you said, not only did he live a charmed life, he also had the charm, and
sure,
he also have Joseph P. to back him financially and every way. So yeah,
that's sort of putting the cart before the horse. I think that's sort mm-hmm. of being that's looking at things with hindsight and not actually, you know, like, yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to end there, and thank you so much again to Ryan for joining us and bringing.
Thank you so much for having
me. Awesome series. It has been awesome, and you guys know you will hear from him again soon. So be on the lookout for that, and I will talk to you guys soon.
4 more days, 4 more nights, a rescue boat pulled into sight. The PT-109 was gone, but Kennedy and his crew lived on. Now, who could guess, or who could possibly know, that this same man named Kennedy would be the leader of the nation, be the one to take command. The PT-109 was gone, but Kennedy lived to fight.